that certainly was a great education for me about how policy is made and compromise and working across the aisle and really kind of, you know, how the American public can affect policy.
Not all the American public feels they can.
Well, that's true. Things are certainly a little different now than they were when I was in the Senate. So I'm showing my age. But, you know, I still have confidence in our ability to impact policy and for Congress and the administration to work together and get things done. And I guess that's why I'm still working in the public policy arena, because I have faith in the system.
And that faith has been shaken, though, it sounds like, in recent years.
Any time where you have experienced an economic recession or downturn, there are things get a little bit harder. I think also that, you know, certainly, as you well know, media has played a role in really accelerating the rate at which we learn things and can impact and speak to others. And so I think, I think things are a little bit more complicated these days. But I think at the end of the day, most people that go to Washington and serve still have the nation's best interests at heart and really want to do the right things and represent their constituents. And so I think, you know, we all have a role to play. So if you're someone that doesn't think that Washington's doing what you want them to do, everybody out there should write and call and visit and just speak up.
Let's talk now specifically about clean energy. And I guess the good news, isn't it, Phyllis, is that worldwide investment in clean energy is way up.
Well, we have seen a surge, absolutely, over the last decade in clean energy investment. Last year, we actually saw a little decline in clean energy investment, private investment, that is, to $269 billion. But that was really more a result of declining prices for clean energy technologies, because even though investment declined a bit, we still saw historic levels of clean energy deployment, 88 gigawatts in the last year alone. So that now there are more than 648 gigawatts of renewable energy capacity installed around the world, which is quite a bit more than, say, nuclear power, as a kind of a comparison. So, you know, in a lot of places around the world, renewable energy is already the cheapest and best option. So it's very exciting. It's a big economic opportunity, particularly for the United States, when you think that we are the country that pioneered so many of these clean energy technologies. And if, you know, the thing we need to do now is manufacture and export them around the world.
Because we are falling behind other countries in that arena, are we not? I mean, having led much of the innovation in clean energy development, translating that to clean energy actually being developed, we're lagging behind many other countries, are we not?
We are, sadly. For instance, you know, since 2004, when we really began to track private investment globally, if you look at kind of the growth in the United States, was clearly the leader for several years. And then we have been jockeying for leadership back and forth with China and other countries. And on a variety of measurements, the United States is indeed falling behind, which, you know, as you said, is very distressing when you consider that we have been the world's leader in these technologies. And, you know, it's just like any other technology that we have, say, whether or not it's the computer or, you know, other things. We really always want to be leading the world, but not only in innovation, but also in manufacture and export. And those are two of the places where we're really falling behind.
And the reasons for that, I suppose, are complex as well. But usually what's pointed to is the uncertainty of federal policy and tax policy and incentives in this country, that they're not as clear-cut as they should be and not in place in some cases.
That's absolutely right. You know, this country has in its past set clear goals when it comes to energy policy. We decided that, say, for instance, electricity was going to be cheap and universally accessible. So we have done things like that in the past, and we have certainly, when it comes to energy, supported emerging technologies, whether it was oil and gas extraction or nuclear power, you know, you name it. And so really what we're looking for now is just the same kind of treatment for clean energy technologies as we have extended to other technologies, incumbent technologies. And so that does include, for instance, certainty, as you mentioned. Certainty is critical whether it comes to investing or deploying or developing, manufacturing these technologies. So when you have a production tax credit, say, that is on again, off again, episodic at best, investors just don't know what to do. It really scares them off. And so what you find is these industries that have great potential are having a struggling to find not only private capital but also access to credit and really just plan and invest themselves. So what we're really asking for in kind of our work in Washington when it comes to public policy is that kind of certainty in the tax code, in the policy arena that will just help promote a more even playing field among technologies and help these companies really better compete and attract private investment.
There are many renewable energy advocates, Phyllis, who think that the imposition of a carbon tax would be a great boon to renewable energy development. Do you agree with that?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's interesting. I think different countries do different things in terms of their policy mechanisms. When we look around the world, and each year we study the private investment of clean energy in G20 nations, so our competitors really around the world, our colleague nations. And what we see is in every country that has steady, predictable policy in place, investment goes up. And so, there's a great variety of different policy mechanisms that are used, whether or not they're feed-in tariffs or carbon policy or others. And so any of those mechanisms certainly could work here in the United States. But the real important kind of ingredient is that long-term predictability that allows growth. Because investors, as you well know, I hate to say it, but they're not particularly patriotic. They want to go where they are going to earn money for, get a bang for their buck. And so that's where they will invest, where they have very steady, predictable policy that's going to lead to growth.
So a carbon tax would work.
Carbon tax could certainly be something, a policy that policymakers should look at.
How, if at all, do new projects that continue our development of fossil fuels suppress, if they do, renewable energy development? I'm thinking, for example, of the Keystone Pipeline, if that is approved and so on. Is that a hindrance or is that just irrelevant to whether renewable energy continues to be developed?
I think when we think about renewable energy, a lot of times we're thinking about the utility sector in terms of wind or solar, combined heat and power efficiency, other things. The pipeline is a kind of a very particular policy. But, it would be misleading to say that the incumbent technologies have not led to growth in our nation that have been an economic engine. I think we're going to have a lot of them for a long time. The real question is, can we get to an even playing field among technologies in terms of policy treatment so that they can better compete with one another, so that consumers can make a decision about, what they would like to consume. So I think anything that is going to increase competition and level the playing field, not tilt the playing field, in the favor of the incumbents, but rather even it out is good for the American consumer and is good for economic growth.
And it's far from even at this point.
Absolutely, absolutely. There have been incentives in the tax code for renewable energy, but as I said, they've been very on again, off again. There are 4 permanent tax incentives in the code for incumbent technologies, some of which have been in place for 100 years. We're advocating that there is equal treatment among these different technologies because, after all, this shouldn't be a very political calculation. This is just a calculation of economics and technology.
As you know, our senior senator is heavily involved in drawing up the new tax reform legislation. I assume you'll be lobbying him.
Well, we are watching what Chairman Baucus is doing very closely. We're certainly talking to his office and other offices to try and press our case, to make our case. He seems to be moving very in a manner that's very comprehensive when it comes to tax reform, both he and his counterpart on the House side, Chairman Camp of Ways and Means. And so I think that they are really trying to look at ways, both of them, to simplify the code, to streamline the code. And as you know, Chairman Baucus has asked his colleagues in the Senate to submit to him ideas for ways to do that, to simplify the code, but also for key incentives that need to remain in the code. So I think there's a lot of thinking going on in the nation's capital about really how you could do that and what your priorities should be when it comes to the tax code. And we certainly hope that the chairman will be supportive. He certainly has been in the past. He helped renew and write the policy that led to the extension of the production tax credit to 2013 for wind. Very important for the wind industry, and of course, the wind industry is very important in Montana. So we hope that he is looking at this very carefully, and will of course be hear our concerns and others.
It's a pivotal time, isn't it, for the renewable energy field?
It is, absolutely. I think there is a lot at stake for this industry because the market for the industry is really growing in the United States, but also outside the United States. And without comprehensive energy policy or national energy policy, it's just very difficult for U.S. manufacturers, for U.S. companies, for U.S. entrepreneurs to compete because the competition is stiff on the global market. Other countries and companies clearly, know that the size of the market is rapidly expanding, and they want a piece of it. And, they want it. These countries want it for all the same reasons we want it. We want to have our own sources of energy. We want to make sure that our sources of energy are cleaner. We want to make sure that we have an economic opportunity with our own domestic energy. So everybody's trying to move into this field, and we have real stiff competition not only from China but from Germany and others. And so there's a lot at stake, and we should be mindful of that because the demand for energy that is growing outside the United States is really coming from developing countries. And again, these are places where clean energy in many cases are the cheapest and best option. It's analogous to the cell phone in Africa. Why are you going to build, a very complicated telephone pole structure, if you will, landline structure, when you can go to cell phones and cell towers? And that's a little bit like clean energy, when you can go to distributed power and you don't need to construct a big, big, big grid. So there's real opportunity outside the United States, and we've really got to seize it, because Montana has a renewable energy standard, and other states in our country do, but a collection of states cannot compete against China. We need a national energy a policy to compete against countries like China.
We'll have been speaking with Phyllis Cudenot, who is director of the Pew Charitable Trust Clean Energy Program. Phyllis, thank you so much for your time. A really fun conversation about clean energy. I appreciate it.
Well, thanks for spending the time with me. Good conversation and fun to have.